there, Green Future Growers. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, and let's get growing. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. Today it is Friday, July 27, 2017, and I'm so excited because I have somebody who's a listener and a gardener and a farmer and someone I know that's just going to drop golden seeds like crazy. So from Koslowski Farms, here's Kara Koslowski. So thanks for coming today, Kara. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Jackie. I'm really excited.
Well, we're excited to have you. Now, did I say your name right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Well, then go ahead and tell listeners a little bit about yourself.
So I'm from Michigan, and that's where I live still now. I work at Fair State University in marketing, so that's my full-time day job. And I've been married for 10 years. My husband and I really like doing anything outdoorsy, hunting, farming. And I am big into holistic health and just being healthy all in general, whether that's exercise, spirituality, and gardening, especially producing what you eat.
Cool. So, did I mention this, but like we connected in the Facebook group. So my big question is like, how did you find the Organic Gardener Podcast? Like, did you listen to the podcast before you joined the Facebook? Like, it never occurred to me that there would be people in the Facebook group that hadn't listened to the podcast until I got into like some of these teaching groups, and I've seen people in the teaching groups that don't know the person's, like they're a podcast host. Is how I found the group. And so then I realized there's people in my group that don't listen to the podcast, don't even know what a podcast is. So how did you find the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group? Were you listening ahead of time or?
Yeah. So I have an hour commute to work one way. So 2 hours a day I'm driving.
Wow.
And I discovered podcasts, to, you know, just pass the time, I guess. And I said, okay, what am I into? I'm into gardening, and that's what I want to listen to because it's fulfilling to me. And so I found your podcast by just doing a search and started listening. And then that's how I found your Facebook group, is I think you must have started mentioning it on your podcast.
Oh, all right. Good to know. Well, I am so excited because I think listeners make the best guests, and they just always have so much to share, and it's just fun to talk to, like, I just love podcasting because it's the best way to meet your peeps and just other people. So I'm glad you joined the Facebook group, and I'm glad you're here. So then you probably know, I always start the show asking about, like, what was your very first gardening experience? Like, were you a kid, an adult? What'd you grow? Like, who were you with?
Yeah, so my previous job, I worked at the YMCA. And we had just started a community garden through a grant. And I just have always been interested in gardening. I never gardened as a kid. My parents, my grandparents never did. And I've always been interested. So I joined the committee as a, you know, person who works there, kind of a liaison to the business, so to speak, and hoping that I could maybe learn some more about gardening. So I started with a 10 by 20 plot, and what they did for the garden is they split it halfway between non-organic and organic.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah, and, you know, I thought, well, how do you keep, you know, the non-organic things from the organic side when there's really no good barrier? So it was kind of, you know,
but a
hearsay.
Good experiment to at least try and think about. I mean, that's what Rodale's has been founded on, the, you know, farm test trial that they've been running for over 40 years, I think, but they have them very separated. I mean, they're like two different farms. I don't know how far apart they are, but so how did that go? I've been doing all sorts of experimenting this summer and trying, like, I just planted this fall broccoli crop, and I put some seeds indoors and some seeds outdoors, and then there's even three different beds outdoors just to see how they do in different places on our property. And it's an interesting experiment that I've got going there. So how did that go?
Yeah. So since it was my first experience, I think it went relatively well for a first garden. I had trouble keeping up with the weeds, but it was basically just a learning experience for me. You know, how do I plant? How do I maintain things? And it was so exciting to see things grow. So I learned a lot from that. And then the next year, my husband and I, we scouted out our property. We have about 15 acres at home, and determined a good spot. And I don't know now that I would call it such a good spot, but it was the best spot we had. And tilled up about a 40 by 40 foot section. So it's relatively small, and it's just for us, really, but it's more than enough for me. And that's what I've been using for years now.
So what makes you say you're not sure it was the best spot?
So as things have grown over the years, we kind of realized there's a couple sections in the garden that don't grow real well. And we kind of realized that we are right in between like four giant walnut trees.
So shade?
That's the struggle.
So
and I've heard that.
Is it shade or I've heard walnut trees like put off something that.
Yeah, it's like poisonous basically to almost any kind of plant that tries to grow around it. A lot of different vegetable plants can't grow even by the roots. So I think as the trees grew bigger, the roots kind of expanded out into sections of the garden. So we're kind of scouting out to look for a new spot. And this year we tilled up a spot where we had the pigs last year, and hoping that, you know, there was a lot of nutrient-rich soil in there. And then we planted just some rye over there as a cover crop till we get to planting it next year.
Cool. Well, so many things there. And then I feel like another theme that people have been talking to me about, like I even just met with Robin Kelson the other day, and she was talking about she's been going and volunteering and just, I've loved so many people like go and volunteer at other people's farms or at their community gardens. I talked to another girl in the Facebook group, Angel, who's going to talk about her experiencing volunteering, and Vicki Henderson and I talked about volunteering. And I just think that's so essential, whether, you know, you want to commit all the way to woofing and like going and really interning, or just like Robin goes to a local farm just 3 hours once a week. But I think there's probably places where you just go for 1 hour a week if you don't want to commit too much time. But how much people learn from volunteering at other farms. So is that kind of how you ended up learning how to grow organically, I guess, then? That kind of answers that question from working at the YMCA and that experimental crop or garden, or was it something else?
You know, I did learn a little bit from the other gardeners there, because it was a community plot. I think there was maybe 20 plots available. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of other gardeners in there when I go out there. And that was part of the fun part of it was, you know, you weren't alone and you could talk to other people about and look at what they're growing and how it's growing versus how yours is growing and how they've set up trellises. What kind of watering system they have. So that was really interesting part. I learned a lot from that. But besides the experience there, I'm a big research person. So I like to read and research and then just go for it.
Cool. All right. Well, do you want to tell us about something that grew well this year then?
Yeah. So my style of gardening is kind of like, I plant as much variety as possible, which may be kind of overwhelming to some people, but I would say I probably have at least 40 or 50 different things in my garden, not counting like 5 different pepper varieties and 5 different tomato varieties. I do a lot of herbs and different stuff. I have a patch of amaranth that's just, it's red amaranth and it's so beautiful. It's taller than me right now and it just produces these beautiful purple bursts of fluff, I call it. It's kind of like a
they are like hand, feathers, you know? Right? Almost. They remind me kind of, but not really. I don't know. They look like they'd be soft like a feather, like a fluffy, like a boa, full of feathers or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Beautiful purple, dark purple, you know, it just really adds a lot to the space, the visual aspect of the space. But my peppers are doing really well this year. And then I also tried doing some interplanting with marigolds and dill in my tomatoes. And I've noticed that I haven't seen any hornworms yet on my tomatoes, so that's exciting.
Nice. Well, I think that's a reason Mike doesn't have as big a problems with those, because he always has lots of marigolds. And then our dill just comes back. Like, I've always, there's dill down there now. Like, we planted it 1 year, and it kind of self-seeds and moves around the garden and goes in different places. And so, awesome. So, is the amaranth a cover crop that you're going to turn in? Am I remembering that right? Isn't amaranth like a cover crop that, like, Jess Pierce talked about from Bountiful Garden?
You could probably plant it as a cover crop. Mine, I just kind of planted a little spot last year, I think. And then it came up again this year on its own. So I just left it and weeded it. And I've got probably 6 or 8 big, tall stalks. Not a whole lot, but I tried to harvest it last year. But I think the birds get most of the seeds before I can harvest anything. I feel time in and out and in the seed.
And then what do you do with amaranth? Is it like a grain, like quinoa or wheat or something?
Yep, it's a grain. Most of the time I'll use it in baking bread. You can toast it just in a saute pan. But most of the time I just use it in baking.
Cool. And then just one last question. Like, I have never gotten, I've bought it like 3 or 4 different times and I've never gotten it to germinate, which is probably my fault because I either didn't water or anything, but do you have like any success? Cause it's a kind of a hard thing. Is it just me or I don't know.
I started inside when I first started them.
Started them inside.
And I did. Yep. I started them inside under a fluorescent bulb. And they sprout just fine. And then I guess they transplant well. So I just threw them in the garden and they did great.
Cool. Okay. Well, maybe I just, and we all know that I am definitely a newbie to the garden scene, but I've spent more time in the garden this summer than ever before. So every year I do a little more. So it could be
nice.
All of my stuff has a hard time starting because I planted my first cover crop. I planted buckwheat, and like when I planted it, I thought it was raining enough that it would sprout, but it didn't. So then I soaked it and then it finally sprouted. And so it should be ready to harvest, I think, next week, because I think I planted it like July 1st and it says 30 days. So I'm hoping we'll see. It's been interesting though, but it's growing like crazy these last couple of days. So my first experiments with cover crop after reading Anna Hesse's primer. So how about, what's something you're excited to do different next year, or something new you want to try, or even like later this year or this year at all?
Yeah, so we have a whole bunch of manure that is from the pigs that we want to spread. We kind of do that every year, but I've always been a little hesitant to put too much on. So I'm really going to put a lot on this year and till it in and see if I can really build the soil up. And then we've never actually done a soil test here. So I'd like to do that too.
Cool. You know, speaking of Jess Pierce, so I just got John Jevons' book out of the library. And all I can think is, how have I never bought this book? It is just so amazing, full of like everything you need to know. And one of the things I remember in that book is it had a chart of the different manures, like what's the difference between cow manure and chicken manure and pig manure and stuff like that. So that's a great resource for people. So I'm curious to see how your experiment goes. So I hope you'll post in the Facebook group so we can learn from that. And if you get your soil test done, which I'm in the same boat, I've always wanted to get Mike to do a soil test, and I finally talked him into it, and then I've been totally slacking because I haven't gone down there, shoveled the dirt into a jar, and sent it off. But I wonder what that would do, because I think a lot of market farmers talk about that's just essential for production, for increasing production. And they talk about, there's the three basic fertilizers, what is it? Nitrogen, phosphorus, and what's the K? Potassium. And then, do I have that right? MP, I don't know, just MPK. But anyway, that sometimes it can be like some obscure thing like gypsum or boron or some other weird thing you've never even heard of that could be missing that can make a huge difference. And Anastasia Kolpakeyas from the Farm on the Roof also talked about they had this grad student come and do their data, and that helped them. Like, I want to say they had like arugula that was like burning or the leaves were like fading, and it turned out to be some weird thing they had to add to their soil. So, yep, the power of soil testing. So, do you want to tell us about something that didn't work? So that's what you're going to try. Your next new tip is to try to build up your soil and get some soil testing done. But what's something that didn't work so well this season or didn't turn out the way you thought it was going to?
Well, of course, not everything always grows like it's supposed to. But the biggest factor, I think, for us this year has been the dry, hot weather. And I know there's a lot of farmers in our area who are suffering from that, and their crop production is pretty low. And at least here in northern Michigan, we have pretty sandy soil where we're at. So we're limited to what we can grow as far as crop fields. Like corn doesn't grow very well here, but we do a lot of Christmas trees and hay. And I've heard some of the hay farmers say that they don't even know if they're going to get a third cutting this year.
Wow. Because there's no water and they don't irrigate, or it's just too hard?
Yep. Just not enough water this year. Things just haven't grown. And it's been so hot, unusually hot. I think we've had a couple months of 80 and 90 degree weather, which is very, very uncommon for us in northern Michigan.
I hear you. We're battling all of that here, dry. So one resource I would point you towards is Patty Armbruster, which is interesting because we're going to talk today right after we're done. Maybe I'll talk to her about that. Is really doing a lot of research with dry irrigation, places where they don't have water, they can only depend on rain in eastern Montana, and how they're, mitigating the lack of water, and also some things that they're having luck with growing. I even saw this one farmer who's growing worm castings in this like super dry. It just looks so interesting. I can't wait to learn more about that. But definitely, resiliency in the faces of climate change and different things that are going on in our country, and different irrigation systems. People, I've talked to a lot of people this summer who say the only thing that's really working for them was that they put into, like I was talking to Lynn Hendricks the other day, who is a farmer near us that we, she has lots of animals, huge gardens down there. She's north of Whitefish. And what they're doing, different things that they're having to try. Oh, I lost my train of thought completely.
I looked into irrigation and trying to get something set up in my little tiny garden this year. And I actually visited a local CSA, and that's kind of my, alternative to volunteering. I just go talk to other gardeners and with whatever time I have. And this CSA is great. They have quite a bit of land that's planted with vegetables. I can't remember how many shares they have, probably 50 some. Actually, maybe somebody to hook you up with. But
cool. I'm always looking for that.
They have a really cool they have a really cool irrigation system that they just use this soft, flexible plastic hose. And I tried to find it online and wasn't as successful as I thought. So I think that could be something I'd like to do different next year, is try to get something like that set up in case we have another dry year, because I've spent so much time just standing there with the hose watering.
Me too. I go down in the garden at the end of the day and set my timer for 6 minutes and kind of move it around, and we'll leave it for 6 minutes in an area and 6 minutes in another. But I there's places where, like, if you, it's really hard to get it to, like, stay in the little area, so you just got to kind of stand there. And we have spent a lot of, like, we practically have water going 24/7 as much as our well will put out. So then we have it on, like, a really low thing, is part of why it also takes us so long. But yeah, Robin Kelson, Lynn Hendricks, they were both telling me their success is all built on like some kind of self-watering systems that they've put up this year.
Yeah.
And so on the flip side, I think I talked to, I want to say it was Lee Reich from, he wrote this book called The Weedless Garden, like less weeds and less having to spend less time weeding. And he was saying that everybody should get a, that they're so easy to come by Lowe's and different places anymore, that really you'd be saving our planet by helping to save water by investing in one of those. So it's not even just your time, but just because it's such an efficient way to do it. But I know, I can see our trees are, like, drooping. Our trees could use. And then that was the other person I talked to, Richard Woodswall, talked about tripling your water production in your fruit trees can make a huge, or tripling the amount of water you put on your fruit trees can, like, triple your production. And I can tell our trees, you can just see their leaves curling up at times, but we just only have so much water to go around between Mike's mini farm and stuff. So water is key for sure.
It is.
Before we get to the root of things, we're going to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. Now it's my first sponsor, Robin Kelson from the Good Seed Company. Welcome, Robin.
Yay! Thank you. I'm so happy to be here and very happy to be your sponsor. We have a large variety of locally adapted, open-pollinated, non-GMO vegetable, flower, and herb seeds. And we hope you'll enjoy visiting our website, goodseedco.net or Good Seed Montana, and seeing the resources that we offer for becoming a better gardener, a better seed saver, and a member of building resiliency around food in your community.
Seed Voyage makes it easy to connect home food growers with the eaters who appreciate the flavor and freshness of ultra-local produce. Sign up for free at seedvoyage.com as a grower and offer some of your delicious surplus to members in the community. You'll be able to share your passion and make a few bucks. Eaters, sign up and see the amazing things being grown all around you. It might be the best and only way to try those Cherokee purple tomatoes and black nebula carrots you've been reading about. Seed Voyage, a farm in every yard.
And now, let's get to the root of things.
So, we're actually already at getting to the root of things. So, do you have a least favorite activity that you got to kind of force yourself to do to, in the garden?
Well, I would say that probably maintaining the fence, which is pretty much weeding and weed whacking, probably my least favorite thing to do. And I guess that goes back to my goal too. I would like to get some raised beds going so that I have less fence and weed maintenance. So I'd say that's probably my least favorite activity to do is weeding. And then also maintaining the fence is the biggest thing. Like I hardly ever weed whack around the outside of the fence because I just never get to that. The inside is enough for me.
So is that like a fence to keep the pigs in, or like the fence around your garden to keep deer out, or like what fence, I guess I'm confused about? Or just you have fence around your garden to keep rabbits and all kinds of creatures out, or?
Yeah, basically just fenced in the whole garden because our garden is quite a ways from the house where we can't see it, and there's quite a bit of deer and other animals, rabbits and such out there. So
I get it now. Yep. And I was laughing because you were like, it's a 40 by 40 garden. And I thought that sounded huge. And you're like, ah, it's just a small for me and my husband mostly. So it sounds like a pretty big area. So on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
My favorite activity, I would say, is planning the garden. I really enjoy just trying to figure out which plants grow well beside other plants, and rotating my crop, and, you know, like reading about how to plant them and then kind of designing things. Like, I don't have a lot of design aspects in my garden, but I have a teepee for my beans. And then I kind of plant stuff in small little sections and create visual, like, shapes sometimes in the garden. So I think that's probably my favorite part. And then I really like planting too. Just putting those seeds in the ground and waiting for them to come up. And then you see them come up and it's so exciting.
You know, I'm sure you think that's like my least favorite because I am so impatient. Now I am excited because, like, so a couple of weeks ago when I planted those broccolis, I also put some butterfly flower seed and some black-eyed Susans in the ground. And it took like almost 10 days or 2 weeks for them to sprout. And I was so frustrated. I just thought I am definitely more into transplants. So like they come up in the house, it doesn't take as long.
Yeah.
And then I like putting them in the ground. Like I found this girl that was selling out like a whole bunch of starts. Like she had some lavender. She had some nice big black-eyed Susan plants, some snapdragons. I put those in instant color, instant plants. And I just feel like that bed, like I'm definitely a transplant and perennial girl. So, but yeah, cool.
Yes.
And then the other thing I've been struggling with is like, so I made that, spring garden journal and the 2018 data journal keeper, and like I've decided that I am, even though we have goals, I am not very good about writing my goals down ahead of time. I'm much more of a journalist that says this is what I did do and then maybe writing later on what the successes were, but I have a harder time planning. So kudos to you for planning ahead of time. Because to me, I'm just frustrated. Like, I looked at all the things Mike and I put on the our first 10, you know, things we wanted to do. Like, the 10 things we said we were going to do in January. And I think we only completed one of them. And, like, that's, like, kind of like New Year's resolutions. And, like, this year, instead of writing New Year's resolutions in January, I just wrote down what did go well last year. So I think I'm going to work on changing my journal into, like, writing it after the fact. I'm much more of an, this is what I did get done. And I'm not very good at planning, which... maybe my garden, I'd have more success if I did plan more. So Megan Kane says that she loves to plan in the winter and says that's a favorite part. But I struggle with that. I don't know why. Anyway, yep. Kara, what's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
So that was the stumper question.
Oh, really?
I couldn't think of anything really specific, but... I do have some advice to say, like, more in general to farming and life.
Cool.
So we learned how to farm, or farm pigs, I guess, from a friend of ours who had done it kind of his whole life. And he's somebody that is just, you know, just lovable and friendly and just, you know, he'd give the shirt off his back to you if you needed it, kind of guy. So, anyway, his motto is, if you treat them well, they'll treat you well.
That's
how I've always approached farming. And, you know, I think it applies to gardening and it applies to life. You know, treat your plants well and they will produce. So...
sure. And starting out with, you know, you got to give a baby healthy food. You got to give your plants healthy soil, just giving them what they need. I love that. Do you want to talk about the pigs and like some, like if you were starting over, maybe something you would do different or why you guys picked pigs? And you said maybe you're kind of changing out of it and what's fun about those pig pictures are so cute. Just, I don't know, anything about for people maybe interested in getting into selling pork or pigs or anything, or somebody like, I don't know.
Yeah, so we got into it probably 6 or 7 years ago. Just kind of, we both grew up in the city, but we kind of are more attracted and feel more comfortable in farming areas and the outdoors and remote areas. So we've always kind of known that we wanted to go that direction in life. And so we had our pig mentor, and this happened that we had a couple people that wanted to get into it with us. So we started farming with another family, which is what really helped us get going, because we didn't really know much about pigs or breeding or anything like that. So we did some breeding with them. Well, the pigs, of course, you know. And that was a very fun and unique experience. I would say it's definitely worth being part of. Like you're talking about volunteering, it's something that I would definitely recommend just experiencing at least once in your life, giving, you know, helping with the birth of farm animals, because it's just such an amazing thing. Yeah. These little tiny pigs just pop out, and you know, you have to clean them up and take care of them. You see them take their first breath, and it's an amazing thing. Watch them grow up. And so we did that for a couple of years, farming with another family, and then decided to go off on our own and look at maybe expanding a little bit. We contacted some local restaurants, meat distribution companies, and got some more information. And it sounded like we were kind of right in the middle between just raising things for your own needs or your friends and family, and actually producing commercially, which is quite a bit bigger than what we wanted to do. So we decided to kind of take a chance and go right in the middle and see if we could make it happen. We had, I think, 7 or 8 sows and 3 boars at one point, which was too many. I wouldn't recommend that, but we just kind of acquired them over the year. Oh, you have a pig that needs a home. I guess we'll take it in, kind of thing. And They are, and they're very smart animals, which is something that was interesting to me. They all have their own personalities, and they're extremely smart. So they need company. They need to be around other pigs. They need attention. And so we had a radio on for them all the time, and just go out there and feed them and talk to them and stuff at night. All the breeding stock had names based on their personalities, and it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work at the same time, which is kind of why we decided to change directions a little bit and stop breeding. That was really the biggest time consumer, was the breeding. You know, if you're not there when they have them, you have a lot higher risk of losing pigs. And then taking care of the little ones is a lot more work. You've got to, if you don't have them outside, you have to give them iron shots. And then you have to, castrate them. That's fun.
It is.
My husband did that part. So with pigs, it's basically like a surgery. Instead of where, like, cattle, you just band them, pigs, you have to actually make an incision. So that part's not all that fun. And then, you know, if you do vaccinations or anything like that, we didn't really do any vaccinations, just whatever was needed. If there was pneumonia going around, we'd do what we had to do to help them get healthy again. But the breeding was really the most time-consuming part. So I think the direction we're going now is to just raise them up to butcher, and then we sell them for meat.
So I guess I'm kind of confused about what the difference is. But I have to ask a question first. Like, in the beginning, you were talking about that they, you know, need a lot of attention and this and that, and surprising things about pigs. Pigs are surprisingly really clean, too, right? Like, people think they're muddy and messy, but they're not, really, if you give them the space, right? They're actually really clean animals. Am I right about that?
They are very clean. If they have enough space, if their pens are big enough, if they're indoors, then they will defecate on one side and sleep on the other side. And they don't really like it when their pens get dirty. They'll get upset about it.
Cool. Okay, so then the other thing I'm confused about is, like, how does that work? Like, somebody else breeds them and then you get babies that are already born instead of raising babies? Is that what you mean by stop breeding?
Yep, that's the goal. So we have some friends in the area, and then that took 3 or 4 of our sows. And they are more full-time farmers, so they're going to be breeding. And then we sold a couple of them. So our goal is to just kind of find someone, and it probably will be the friends of ours that we gave the sows to. Just grab a couple piglets in the spring, raise them through the summer, and butcher them in the fall. So we're all set up already for outdoor, with outdoor pastures. So that's how we're going to raise them from now on.
Okay. The other question I have is, like, is it hard to butcher them if you're naming them and they have all these personalities? Like, how do you deal with that part?
You know, I thought in the beginning, I wasn't kind of sure how I would feel about that. But really, the sows and the breeding stock are something that you don't normally eat. I mean, we kept ours for 4 years or so, and then we'd rehome them. We did end up butchering one of them, but we sold the meat. We didn't actually eat it. So that was all right. I don't think it'd be tough, though. I probably would have ate her.
All right. Well, that's good to know, because I always wonder about that kind of question. And then, because Mike's always talking about, if we get a dairy cow, we'd have to get a pig right away for all the extra milk. He's always like, if you get a cow, you get a pig together. Because he had cows when he grew up. And we're like on the edge of that. Like, we always said he didn't want to have a cow because he didn't want to be tied down and have to milk it twice a day and this and that. And I don't think Mike's like barely left the property in 2-3 years anyway. So I don't know what he's worried about being tied down. So, cool. I'm glad to hear all this stuff. Huh?
Oh, I was just going to say, we talked about getting some cattle too. But it's the same thing. We don't know if we necessarily want to be tied down to that. It's tough to get people to, you know, cattle sit.
Huh? If there's a business for somebody out there, cattle sitting. You can go around the country cattle sitting for somebody and watching while they're pigs go on vacation, or while their owners go on vacation, cows, and who knows, there could be people out there already doing that. I'm just, because Mike already, like, so we have, one of our cats had kittens, and Mike keeps calling them, one's the Holstein, because it's black and white, and one's black, he's like, that's the Black Angus, and I forget what the other name, and he's like, my grandkids came up the other day, and he's like, this is Holstein Angus, and so-and-so, and the kids are, he's like, how do they not know what a cow is? I'm like, how would any kid today know what a cow is? How would anybody know what you're talking about? Like, really, the only reason I know a Holstein, and the Holstein's the black and white one, right? It's actually because when I worked at Head Start, we went to the farm, and, like, they had these Holsteins there that were, like, huge. Like, they were twice the size of me. They were, like, the biggest cow I'd ever seen. And if I hadn't been there that day and stood there, like, I would never remember. Like, I don't know. Mike just thinks everybody should know the difference between cows.
So I'm a little I don't know.
Go ahead.
But I do know if you have one pig, you should have two. So that's probably a factor in your decision, too.
Oh, good to know. Guinea pigs are like that, too. As a matter of fact, there's, like, several countries that you are not allowed to have only one guinea pig because they're such social animals. You have to have two. So pigs are the same way, huh?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they get real upset when they're kind of just by themselves. They get depressed, and it affects their health.
Aw. Well, I know our poor rooster has been lonely, and finally, Lynn Hendricks gave me 2 chickens the other day, so now he has 2 hens to hang out with, and I'm sure he's much happier. I'm not sure those hens are so happy. They're kind of like, what is going on? But I think they'll all get along pretty good, so... How about a favorite tool that you like to use? Like, if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
My husband said that definitely won't happen. that would never happen. We would never move and only take one tool.
Oh, you would take, like, a whole bunch of tools?
Yeah, yeah. He basically said the answer to that question is just no. That wouldn't happen.
Okay. Well, how about your 3 favorite tools?
I do have a favorite tool though.
Oh, okay.
So there's a short story behind it.
Cool.
So I've been listening to your podcast for quite some time now, and I've always listened to that question. You know, and what do people say? What are their favorite tools? I always want to learn how to, of course, control my weeds better because I don't like weeding. So many, many, many people on your show have mentioned the stirrup hoe.
Yeah.
So I finally got one this past year, and I would say that so far that is probably my favorite tool.
Cool.
And I had no idea where I bought it. And I just bought one because your listeners or your people said that I should have one.
It's so true. I went with Joyce Pinson was the first one I think that talked about it. She said she was at like some fair and her husband wanted her to buy one that was like $125, and she's like, what the heck could be so cool about this tool? That but she said it just glided across the weeds and she just loved it, and a lot of people have recommended that. And Mike does not have one, but I need to get him one of these days. He's really battling the weeds. So that's the one thing that, like, now that he has this mini farm and he has to put, like, a spray thing on that, like, waters this whole giant area, he's getting a lot more weeds. Whereas, like, when we didn't have running water, we only watered the roots. And you didn't really get weeds because you were only putting water right at the base of the roots. We were so limited. And I think that's why those irrigation systems and soaker hoses work so well, because you're not wasting any water, which is like, you know, it waters in between the plants and just waters the whole, you know, goes around, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, cool. So I'm so glad you bought one and something from my show is helping you and other listeners out there. Well, I know my show is a success because of my amazing guests, just like you, Kara. So how about, what's your favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden or your favorite recipe you like to eat from the garden?
So my favorite recipe to make from the garden is salsa. Mm-hmm. And I, for the years, kind of just perfected the recipe, but I've only done water bath canning. So this year, my goal is to get my pressure cooker out and try not to, you know, explode anything or make a mess.
Well, there's 2 good podcasts out there about canning. One's Teresa Lowe's, I want to say it's Grown, Homegrown or something. She's down in LA and she's on like PBS and she has like a TV show and everything. But then I found this other podcast, Melissa K. Norris from Pioneering. It's called Pioneering Today. And she has some great, she has like a whole course you can join in a pioneering academy, but she talks a lot and teaches a lot. Like, even if you just go to her website, you can learn a lot about canning. So I know I am always scared when Mike gets the pressure canner out. I'm like, oh, is it gonna explode? But it never has. So what's in your salsa recipe?
My grandma gave me the pressure cooker, and you know, she put a little note inside of it that said something along the lines of be extremely careful using this.
Yeah.
And so ever since then, I thought, oh wow, okay, I think I'd better you know, maybe learn how to do this first before I just start, you know, heating things up and hurting myself.
I know. I've always, but my, I mean, I guess I think his mom, you know, he grew up where they she canned a lot of their food, so he watched it over the years. And then I think his ex-wife used to can food. So I learned how to can peaches when I first moved here, and I think we even made some jelly, but I don't know. I kind of shy away from it, but I'm sure you'll get the hang of it, and then you'll be so glad. But I'm curious about your salsa recipe, because salsa has been a challenge for me. I love salsa. I put salsa in everything, but I have not found, like, mine always comes out too runny. So what do you got? Like, got some secrets for us for salsa recipe?
I would say the consistency of your tomatoes really makes a big difference, and the amount of liquid that you're actually putting in there. So I usually roast mine to get off the skin. Mm-hmm. And I really just make sure that all the liquid is out, because I save that liquid and I'll use it just make like tomato soup with it, or put it into a stock or something like that with the juice, so it doesn't go to waste for me. And because I've just done water bath canning, you have to follow specific recipes. I'm sure you know that, because it can spoil if you don't, because it's not heated up like a pressure canner does. So I've tried a couple different recipes, but I feel like all the salsa recipes are really, really similar, and you can't really alter them, which is one of my favorite things to do, is be creative in the kitchen. My husband's always telling me that I cook the weirdest things, but they always turn out good. But cool. They're my ingredients are all over the place, or, you know, I just got a spiralizer that goes on my KitchenAid, so I'm spiralizing everything. And that's fun. But as for salsa, I guess I pretty much just follow the proven recipes. I usually get mine from like an extension office or something like that, that I know is from a credible source.
Good to know. No, I didn't really, I don't know. I haven't, I'm kind of like you. I would probably just put it in there. So when you say you roast the tomatoes, like, so you put them on, like, a cooking sheet in the oven at, like, 400 degrees, and, like, they heat up, and then you peel the skins off? Is that what you mean? And then do you put them, like, through, like, a blender or something? Like, how do you get that liquid out?
Yeah, so I think Martha Stewart has a really good recipe for roasted tomatoes. It's really not that hard. Really, all you do is you cut an X in the bottom of the tomato, like not where the stem comes out, you put it stem down, and then you just cut a little X in the top, and then roast them. I couldn't tell you what temperature or for how long, but you can kind of tell the skin starts to just kind of fall away from the tomato, and it really just slides off a lot easier than blanching.
Does it make them taste like roasted? Does it make your salsa taste different that way?
I haven't really noticed any difference, I don't think.
Cool. And roasted would be good, too.
Yeah, I don't think I roasted them long enough to actually really cook them much, or brown them or anything, so I don't think they get that flavor all the way. But I'm sure they do a little bit. But then you're on, like, a sheet pan, so you just kind of dump out all the juice into a jar or something. And I just freeze it like that. I don't do anything else to it. I just freeze it like that. I'll get it out and just heat it up in a pan, and there you go. Tomato soup.
Wow. That's awesome, because I love tomato soup, and I've never made homemade tomato soup like that. I'm going to try that this year. I don't think we're going to get a lot of tomatoes at our house specifically, but I'm going to look for some at the farmer's market or somewhere. Because that would be great. I eat a lot of salsa. How about a favorite internet resource? Where do you like to surf on the web?
Yeah, so I like using the extension website. I think one of your last interviews with the mosquito person.
Oh, yeah, Brandy Stupid.
Yeah, so she was talking about the Michigan State University Extension Office. And I was like, yeah, use that too. That's probably my favorite resource, just because I know that it's a credible resource. And like she was saying, you can get a lot of really thorough documents on there that have all kinds of information. And it's a local school. So it's an agricultural school, and it's in Michigan. So when they talk about what grows well or how to grow something, they're referring to our climate here and our soil and, you know, all the different factors of, you know, your location. So I would say that's my favorite resource for actually garden, farming, vegetables, flowers, and for pork. They have a huge farm down there at the university, and they grow and they research pigs, and they have all kinds of resources for farmers through their website.
Awesome. How about a favorite reading material, like a book, since you said you like to do a lot of research and reading?
Yeah. So, I don't know how long ago, probably 10 years ago or more, my husband went to Florida with his family. And, of course, I didn't go. I don't remember why, but I didn't go. He brought me back a gift. And it's funny because he always says he doesn't ever know what to get, you know. But then he always comes up with the best gift. So he brings back this organic gardening book. And I thought, wow, this is great. I'm excited. But, you know, a lot of times you get a book and you might read it or read part of it, and then it just kind of goes on the shelf. Well, this one has been probably the book out of all the books I have that I've actually used the most. And it's called The Gardener's A to Z Guide to Growing Organic Food by Tanya L.K. Denkla, D-E-N-C-K-L-A. And basically, it's got some general information like composting and mulching and feeding your soil and stuff like that. But really, the book is more focused on being like a resource guide. So it has like hundreds of different varieties of fruits and vegetables. And then when you go to the page, it tells you what type of temperature the soil or the seeds germinate in, what pH the plant needs, how to fertilize it, what type of water it likes to have, how big the plant typically gets. And then it's got guides on when to plant, if you're transplanting, or, you know, 7 to 21 days after the last frost date, all that type of information. It's got pest information, like what is this vegetable typically susceptible to as far as pests and diseases, companions and incompatibles, so what not to plant it by and what to plant it by for the health of the plant. And then it also has how to store the vegetables. So is this vegetable best canned, frozen, or dried? What's the shelf life on that? So it's just like a complete plethora of information. And I find myself flipping through it probably every day.
Awesome. I'm going to have to check that out. I don't think anybody's recommended that book. I don't remember it. So, and that's awesome. I mean, because you said you've been gardening for over 10 years now and you're still using it. So, good to know. So.
Yeah. Really haven't gone out of date, I don't feel like. I'm sure there's new things, and then each section has different varieties. And I've found a lot of varieties that aren't in here, but that's not a huge deal because it's like pole beans in general. It's telling you how to take care of your pole beans in general. It doesn't really matter as much which variety of beans have. So I found that it's just useful in everything. It has fruits and even nut trees So we have a huge walnut tree. We have one in our front yard and then a whole bunch over by the garden. So I've been trying to harvest those over the years too.
Cool. I saw somebody posted a picture. So they were like trying to figure out what it was. And everybody was like, that's a walnut tree. That's a walnut tree. And it was, they look so different because the walnuts were green and everything. Like I was like, wow, that's what a walnut tree looks like. So Mike wanted to get a walnut. That was one of the things on our goals for the summer that we didn't get any kind of a nut tree. So,
nice. Okay.
So I have a new question. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, don't plant it near the garden.
Okay, good.
If you get a walnut. Yeah.
If someone can maybe wave a magic wand and solve all of your gardening problems or your biggest gardening problem, like what would that magic wand look like? What would it do for you?
Oh my gosh. I think the wand would like stop time. And then the whole world would just freeze and I could spend as much time in the garden as I want, and then I could wave the wand again and then the world would start.
I love that. Cool. Okay. So do you have any like business advice for listeners about like running your, I mean, we talked a little bit about it, running the pig farm, or like, did you say you guys are going to try to like in the pre-chat go into starting to sell vegetables and things now, or I don't know. Do you have any kind of business advice for listeners?
Yeah, so we did a lot more with our pork last year. We got a license to sell at the farmer's market, and we did one farmer's market, and it was just part of the summer. We did pretty well at that, and it was really fun just to kind of sit there and talk to people. But I guess my best business advice would be to look for a demand. So, you know, I think you were saying earlier, someone was saying earlier, that they were going to the farmer's market and talking to everybody there. And they said, well, if you can grow asparagus, we can sell every stalk of asparagus that you can grow. So why not grow asparagus? as long as, you know, that's something that you would like to do. I mean, I guess it depends on if you're going into business for fun or to make money, because that's two completely different things. But if you want to kind of do both, then, you know, having a product and having it not sell is probably the most frustrating part. So looking for demand first and kind of getting some people interested before you jump in and put a bunch of money in to produce something that then doesn't sell right away. We've kind of, you know, gone in it slowly with the pigs, started with just friends and family, and then we got the license to sell at the market and started selling packages for sale by the package. That was interesting. It didn't take all that much work, I would say, just kind of learning the laws and making sure we go about it the right way. But we found that people really wanted brats. That was the main thing they wanted, was brats, even though that was one of the more expensive items.
Like
so,
brat,
you know,
first? Is that what you mean by brat?
Yep, bratwurst, yep. Like sausages.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what we found was the biggest demand. So instead of getting bulk sausage or having them keep the like pork chops and pork steaks and all those cuts, we just had them turn entire pigs into bratwurst. And then we got like five different flavors. We got like jalapeno, jalapeno cheese, sweet Italian, Polish sausage, and those things sell like hotcakes. So that would be my biggest advice is if you're looking to start a business, you know, just when you're in the planning phase, make sure that you have something that is going to sell.
I love all all of this advice. This is great. It was Sarah Harding that talked about from Buggy Road Farm down in Whitefish that talked about the asparagus. I remember that. And then also, David Wolverton talked about the tomatoes at the farmer's market in Missoula, because a farmer's market's only successful if there's a lot of farmers. Nobody wants to go to a farmer's market with just one farm stand. So getting those other people on board, helping figure out what they want. But then the other little thing I've been really focusing on this year is having a premium product is so much better than there's only one winner in the race to the bottom. So if you have the cheapest product out there, you know who's going to win? Walmart, Amazon, the big companies. So having a premium product, and that seems to have worked for you guys because you're saying that's what they want, even though it's a little more expensive. So excellent business advice here, Kara. I'm sure I knew you were going to drop tons of golden seeds, and I'm sure listeners are learning just a ton about different things.
Everyone, I just had to mention after the fact that if you're really interested in this, Melissa K. Norris, who has a podcast called Pioneering Today, is doing a bunch of episodes on how to make money from your garden or your farm. And the first episode is all about from your livestock. So if you're interested in what Kira teaches us today, you might be interested in Melissa K. Norris's Pioneering Today podcast. I just happened to catch her episode, I think yesterday it was put out, or this week.
So anything else do you want to say that I've forgotten before I get to our final question?
I don't think so.
Okay. So you probably know how this goes, but if there's one change you would like to see Kira to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about, or project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
So I think there's a big movement right now to local food and supporting your local businesses. And I would definitely have to agree with that. I do my best to be self-sustaining and support local community. But I think one of the biggest problems right now is that the next generation, and even our generation somewhat, is not quite as interested, I don't think, in being self-reliant and gardening and holistic health and food quality. I think there's a lot of terrible foods out there that are really causing a lot of pain to us. And, you know, it's really, aside from the feed the world kind of concept, it's more about, you know, local and health. And that's kind of how I think, I guess, take care of you and yours kind of thing. And I'm all about food quality. And, you know, I think that's probably one of the biggest problems right now, is I just really got into this, this new way of eating, and it's based on your blood type. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really interesting. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but your body can digest different things based on what your blood type is. Mm-hmm. So I've been really getting into that. And, you know, a lot of the basis of his research is, and this is true for every person, is trying to eat foods that are less processed. And I feel like our access to less processed foods has become a lot, greatly reduced over the last, I don't know, 10 years or more. Even growing up as a child, my mom made Hamburger Helper all the time, you know? And now it's like, I wouldn't eat that. It's a whole bunch of stuff that I don't eat in there. Right. So I think that's part of the problem is mm-hmm. that, you know, people are not educated about this because of a lot of the mass marketing that goes on. Oh, this is healthy for you, and this is healthy, and fat is bad. So I guess there's a lot of problems there, but I guess the main one would be, you know, people being interested in being healthy and kind of stopping the busyness of life to maybe get back to what's really important, and that's our health and our well-being, I guess.
Absolutely, and it's true. And I even saw a video on Facebook the other day that was just bugging me because these people were like mocking this woman that was on like SNAP benefits or something, and saying, well, she should be eating healthier food and giving her kids access to healthier food. And I'm sorry, I go into my grocery store and I'm so thankful micros are produced, because it is super expensive these days. And if you have kids, I mean, SNAP benefits, yeah. I think they say give like $1.42 per meal. And just, it is really, really hard to, you know, hamburger helper or macaroni and cheese that you can buy, you know, a box of macaroni and cheese for 40 cents. You know, it might not be the healthiest thing, but if your kids are hungry, you know, it's going to fill them up more than, you know, grapes that are $4. Or maybe you don't have those $4. Maybe you only have the 40 cents, you know. I just think that's so true, that locally fresh foods are, that access for sure is a huge thing. On the flip side, I do see like Montana or farmers markets getting involved with SNAP, where they will like double your benefits if you have, you know, somehow they like pay the farmer.
Yep.
So like the food is half price but still, it's a challenge. So I'm so glad, like, that's what I love about my podcast. I'm so glad you came and shared with us today. So, not that you haven't dropped like a million golden seeds already, but do you have like an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Oh, so it's not necessarily a quote, but it's just kind of my, my words of wisdom.
Yeah. Perfect.
I can say. I always say, you know, don't let yourself get overwhelmed. Don't take on more than you can handle, because then it's not fun anymore. And you just have to kind of remember that not everything is going to be successful every year. Like, you know, we've had some family health issues this year, and that's taken away from my time in the garden, but that's okay. You know, what grows will grow, and it should be fun. So, don't let it not be fun. And if something's not fun, then tire out that part, or, you know, don't do that part if you can. And then my other tip is to get a Bluetooth speaker and listen to music in the garden, because that's my favorite thing to do, is, you know, turn on some good tunes and dance around with my tools or whatever, you know.
Oh, I love that. Nobody has suggested that, and I think that is awesome. When I first started my podcast, I was started like one of the very first people, or three or four interviews, I said, what do you listen to in the garden? And so many people said they don't listen to anything, that I took that question right out. They were like, what? Listen, I listen to the birds. I listen to the bees. I listen to my thoughts. But I think when you're spending, like, I think that's been a big one for me, is listening to podcasts in the garden. It keeps me down there longer. So, but I love that music. And my brother always has a radio playing in their garden and backyard. So I haven't asked you, like, and you talked about your generation, like, are you a millennial? What generation are you? I thought for sure you were, but then if you're talking about you've been married for 10 years already, maybe not.
Yeah, I think I'm right on the cusp. I'm 34, so I'm right on the cusp. So I would say that I relate to some of the, you know, stereotypes of millennials, and then others I don't relate to. So I think I'm kind of right in between.
Yeah, I think so, right? Because I'm just, like, trying to do the math in my head. Like, so 1980 to 1995 is what I kind of use for my general rule of thumb, and it seems like you're probably, like, born, would that be, like, 84?
84, yeah.
Yeah, so yep. I would say you're definitely a millennial right in there. So, and I know there's like stereotypes, but you know, since you listen to my show, I love rock star millennials, and I'm going to put you right in that rock star place. So, do you want to tell listeners how to connect with you, or should we just say they can find you in the Facebook group, or do you guys have a website? Sorry, I didn't get to look. Like, I was on your Facebook page, but do you guys have a website you want to send towards people?
We use our Facebook page a lot. It's at Kozlowski Farms. And I'm also, like you said, a part of the Organic Gardener podcast group. And we have an Instagram page at Kozlowski Farms. I guess that's pretty much it. We've got a website, but we're kind of working it. So.
But just spell Kozlowski for people, because as we know, most of my listeners are listeners and they don't ever go to my website. So it's, do you want to spell for people?
Yeah. Kozlowski.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Kara, for coming on this morning and sharing your knowledge and expertise and your gardening journey. And you've just dropped a ton of golden seeds for us. So you have a great day.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Jackie.
Yeah.
Seed Voyage makes it easy to connect home food growers with the eaters who appreciate the flavor and freshness of ultra-local produce. Sign up for free at seedvoyage.com as a grower and offer some of your delicious surplus to members in the community. You'll be able to share your passion and make a few bucks. Eaters, sign up and see the amazing things being grown all around you. It might be the best and only way to try those Cherokee purple tomatoes and black nebula carrots you've been reading about. Seed Voyage, a farm in every yard.
Hey there, Green Future Growers. Would you like your friends and neighbors to create an organic oasis too? Would you like others in your area to learn about earth-friendly practices for their gardens and yards? If so, we would love it if you would share the Organic Gardener podcast with your local community or college radio station today. Thanks again for listening, and remember, grow local.